This is Over the Garden Gate, a program brought to you by the University of California Cooperative Extension Master Gardener Program of Tuolumne County. The mission of the UCCE Master Gardeners is to provide research-based gardening information to the public. If you would like to contact our Master Gardener Program, please call our hotline, which is area code 209-533-5912. The hotline is not manned full-time, but we do pick up our messages and we will get back to you within the week. Hello everybody, this is Debbie Powell. I'm the Master Gardener Coordinator for both Calaveras and Tuolumne Counties. And I'm here at the Sonora office talking to Lisa Page, a longtime Tuolumne Master Gardener and also President of the Master Gardener Program here in Tuolumne County. Hello, Lisa.
Hi, Debbie.
Good to see you.
You too.
And I just saw you this last Saturday, and you did a wonderful presentation about preparing your garden bed for spring planting and summer planting at the demonstration garden, which was just wonderful. So, but not everybody was able to make it to Open Garden, or I'm assuming not everybody was able to make it to Open Garden, although we had a wonderful, wonderful turnout. There was a lot of enthusiastic gardeners, always good to see. But what should we do in order to start preparing our beds?
Well, we're going to assume that you've already cleaned up from last year's garden, of course, because we wouldn't want to have left all that stuff for pests to overwinter in.
So what do you mean cleaning up?
All your plants from last year that have long past their growing season that may be just laying there decomposing.
You mean like old tomato plants?
Old tomato plants.
Okay.
You know, old squash plants that probably aren't looking so good because they got frozen when we had that really cold weather a while back. So hopefully that's been all cleaned up and your beds are just sitting there.
But what happens if they aren't cleaned up? Should we clean them up now?
Yeah, you definitely want to clean them up now. And with this weather, you know, there's a lot of things that will, pests that will overwinter on that garden debris. And it can be in the form of eggs or it can be in the form of immature, you know, early in their life cycle bugs and also in your soil. And when you leave that all winter, they're really happy. They're liking it. Now they got a place to live. And they're just waiting for you to put new stuff down so that when their life cycle begins, they get to start all over again.
Ooh. Yeah, so we want to get rid of them.
Yeah. Preferably, we try to do that in the fall when we're cleaning up. So, you know, for me,
But if you're like me, I didn't get around to it.
I was guilty, too. I had half cleaned up, and then when it got down to 29 degrees and everything looked really, really bad, I finished cleaning it up pretty quick.
Oh, good. So we've cleaned it up.
So we got that cleaned up. We don't want to overwork our soil, so instead of, I'm not going to ask you to turn it over before you add amendments, because our most important job in the garden as gardeners is to take care of our soil, because without good soil, we don't have good veggies growing out of it. So we want to constantly be feeding our soil with organic matter, whether it's in the form of horse manure, steer manure, chicken manure. We're going to start adding amendments now. So right now with the weather being so lovely, you know, you could probably, your soil may not be overly wet, because we don't want to work our soil when it's overly wet because it compacts our soil. Because there's little air pockets in our soil that we can't see. That's where the water goes down into the dirt, and that's also where the roots find their way down into the soil. So when we compact that, makes it really hard for anything to grow or for the water to get down, and it'll just sit on top of your bed.
Okay.
So we're gonna hopefully get maybe a good layer of, let's say, some, there's a brand of horse, composted chicken manure that I purchased for the garden this past week at Sonora Lumber, and it's already composted for you, and it's mixed with some forest products, which is shredded up, you know, bark and things like that. So that's giving you more organic matter and more humus into your soil.
Okay.
Which feeds our microorganisms, which we want to keep alive and going because that's good for our soil.
Right.
So I added a layer of that. And since it's already composted, if I dug that in right now along with maybe another type of planting mix, whether it's peat moss or something to that effect. I want to put those all in a layer on top before I start digging, but I could dig that in now and I could plant right away because all of those ingredients have all been composted. Let's say you have your own chicken coop, mm-hmm. which is a great source.
Sure.
You've got your own manure right there, chicken right. coop. If when you clean it out and you haven't had it set off to the side for a while to sit and let it age, if you don't plan on planting for about a month, you're okay. You could put that on top of your beds right now and let it sit.
Do they call it aging?
I call it composting. But
because it's breaking down.
Yeah.
It's breaking down, but you need to give that fresh manure time
right.
to
otherwise
decompose.
Yeah, otherwise it's so hot that it will burn your place. Hot that the nitrogen level is so high,
okay.
it's off the charge. So
right.
you try to plant in that and then nothing will grow.
Ooh, we don't want that. We want things to grow.
Right. So if you have fresh horse, chicken, steer manure that you're using, and you don't plan on planting for about a month, and provided that we are going to have some rain, we're hoping.
Sure.
You can spread that on top now and let it sit.
Okay.
Let it age on top of your bed. So when those rains come and it rains on that while it's decomposing or composting,
right.
all of the nutrients aren't being lost. They're going to be washed down
into
your
soil. They're going to go right into your soil.
After if it's got to sit there mm-hmm. and age, then you can start digging it in. I dig it in at 6 to 10 inches, about the depth of your average shovel,
mm-hmm.
your spade.
Okay.
Shovel, big one. Turn it over, break it up if you've got some clods going.
Mm-hmm.
Also, you'll find when you're turning it over, you'll see if you've got, you know, lots of roots left over from before, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. Also, in the act of turning it over and working that in, you're also interrupting the life cycle of any insect larva or like
okay.
tomato hornworms. Their little mm-hmm. egg cases are down in the soil, and you're bringing that to the top of the soil. So you're disrupting their life cycle. A lot of times, after you do that, if you don't cover it up right away, anything that we might not necessarily be able to see, but a lot of times birds will come in and take care of those pest problems for you too.
Oh, that's very efficient.
Yeah, so we're turning it over, interrupting their life cycle. Maybe the birds are getting a chance to get some food out of it and taking care of it for us too. I do believe a lot of those dormant, we shouldn't use dormant, but egg cases,
sure.
you know,
sure.
they haven't hatched yet. You know, when they're exposed to the sun, I don't think that they really appreciate that in the air, because there's a mm-hmm. reason why they're underneath the dirt.
Right,
just
my
way of thinking.
No. That makes sense.
So if I've turned it all over, I've added my organic matter, whether it's in the form of manure. I personally don't like to use a whole lot of granulated fertilizers. If you find you need to add anything like calcium or mm-hmm. blood meal, or cottonseed meal. Blood and cottonseed meal are sources of nitrogen, so if you're adding manure, you don't really need those.
Okay.
But, you know, let's say things like bone meal that you want to mm-hmm. use eventually, those are things you don't want to add till right before you plant, usually.
Okay.
So for now, we're just adding that or that.
The organic matter.
Yeah, and the humus. We're
okay.
building the soil, giving the... And if you have any mulch that was left over after you've cleaned up, say a little straws left over here and there from mm-hmm. the last year, you could dig that into.
Oh, good. So you don't have to waste that or
right.
throw it in a separate pile.
I mean, if it's still not, a lot of times it looks like it's started to decompose, just go ahead and dig it in.
Okay.
But if it looks like you can reuse it, which I have in the past, because
right.
I'll do it rather deep,
mm-hmm.
I'll pull some of that off to the side and leave it till way later when I'm done turning it over. After I've done turning it over, leave it open for a while in this kind of weather, let the birds get a chance to come in and have at whatever predators.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Then if I know it's going to rain hard, then you really would like, it's best to cover back up with something like straw that's a good mulch. The water's still going to get through, but the rain's not going to be pounding on your soil, which once again will compact your soil.
Oh, just even those
raindrops
will compact.
The dirt. Yep.
Isn't that something?
And a lot of people don't realize the erosion that you can get from that too.
Sure.
Soil loss may not see it, but
mm-hmm.
so, and the worms really appreciate the mulch.
Sure.
You put on top of it.
So then by doing all of that, are you then ready for spring planting when spring comes, or for summer vegetables, whatever
you
should
be
gonna
good
be,
to go.
You should know. Be. There isn't anything else you have to do in addition to that?
No, just at the time of planting, that's when you want to add your things like oyster shell, calcium,
okay.
if you think you need it.
If you think you need it.
Which, and bone meal, which is which we, what we call roots and fruits.
Okay.
It feeds the roots and helps them grow. It also helps the fruit, which is your tomato or your pepper. That's the best way it was for me to remember.
Oh, that's a good way. That really is. That's a very good way to remember.
You know, and you'll know, your plants are a good indicator of something, like if you need calcium, that's something that you can always come back.
How would you be able to tell?
Usually if you have a calcium deficiency, you'll get a lot of blossom end rot on your tomatoes, which is a sunken brown spot on the bottom of your tomato. But you want to go to your first possible cause of that would be if you have inconsistent watering. But for me, I came up with a calcium deficiency because I realized that since I have stationary beds, I can't. Mm-hmm. It's harder for me to rotate crops as often as I should probably or can.
Right.
So a lot of times I've replanted tomatoes maybe in the same hole a few times, even though I have amended the soil.
Sure.
Over the last 20-something years, so some of that calcium's become deficient because it's been all used up.
Oh, my goodness.
So I found I added some oyster shell calcium last year, which made a big difference in the quality of the tomatoes I found. Also, the amount of organic matter that I added last year. I used peat moss, chicken manure, and a thing called planting mix, which is a combination of forest blend. There's composted chicken manure in that. It also has some dolomite lime, which is a source of calcium mixed in it too. Kelp meal, bat guano, it's got all kinds of really good stuff in it. So even just that alone, without the compost or chicken manure, probably would have been fine if you haven't overly used your beds.
Right.
But I always think a little bit more is okay.
Sure. Now, how would you know if you have a nitrogen deficiency?
If your plants are yellow and spindly and your foliage doesn't look so good. That's a really good chance that you've got a nitrogen deficiency. Because nitrogen will make your plants vigorous and healthy.
Green?
Yeah, and green. If you get an over large amount of nitrogen, though, you'll get this lovely, lush plant, but you won't get any fruit.
Oh, why is that?
Because you've got out of balance. You've got too much nitrogen, not enough phosphorus and potassium, which are the other components of the three numbers that you'll see on any fertilizers.
Right.
Any fertilizers you buy, even if you look on the bag of the compost or chicken manure, it should tell you the percentage of available nitrogen and phosphorus and potassium.
So with that, Lisa, I think we've just about run out of time for this segment of the show. And I ran in.
This is KAADLP 103.5 FM, Sonora, California.
This is Debbie Powell. I'm the Master Gardener Coordinator for both Calaveras and Tuolumne Counties, and I'm at the Sonora office talking to Lisa Page, who is the president of the Master Gardener Program and a longtime gardener. Hello, Lisa.
Hi, Debbie.
How are you doing today?
I'm great. Thank you.
So one of the topics we wanted to ask you about, you have such a depth of information. But one of the things we count on you to do at our open garden events and all kinds of other events is to talk about seed starting, how to start seeds. And one of the things that it seems like about seeds is there's a great mystery and that it's a really hard thing to do. Got any thoughts about that?
No, I think it's really not as hard as most people think. I mean, it's just a matter of getting started and knowing the basics of what you need to get started. So hopefully, I mean, even I've had failures, so it's...
So even you have had failures.
It's a learning process. I've been doing it for probably, starting seeds, probably 26 years.
Oh, that's a long time. That's quite an experience.
And it's evolved and progressed over the time period.
So how do you do it? And what seeds do you start?
Well, for myself, I like to start summer vegetable seeds, so tomatoes, peppers, eggplant, some herbs I'll start, basil, squash, I start any of your summer vegetables and herbs, I like to start those. And generally, I usually do my seed starting for all those things beginning around the first or second week of March.
Oh, okay. And why do you pick the first, why do you pick that time period?
Well, for things like tomatoes and peppers, you want to get a good jump start on the season so that when it's time to plant them out, you're going to have really good sized plants that are a lot of times larger, and they're going to be more healthier than what you can buy at the local nursery. Plus you get an endless choice of different varieties you can choose, specific to size, taste, color. It's endless, whether it's vegetables, flowers, herbs. Mm-hmm. So it leaves your options open, and a lot of times you can pick things that are more appropriate to grow at your particular elevation.
Okay.
So I know. Go ahead.
Can I ask you where you get your seeds from? Are there particular places that you like to go?
Well, there's a couple of seed companies. I used to order from any basic random seed company, but then I started thinking most of the seed companies that I was ordering from in the early 90s were all back east, and then I ran across a company out of Oregon, a couple companies, and I figured they're over on this coast. And they would tend to have more seeds that are more developed to grow in our particular climate.
Okay, that makes sense.
That's just my way of thinking it.
Sure.
So there's a company called Territorial Seed Company that I've been ordering from for probably 26 years.
Okay.
And there was another one called Nichols. Now, they don't put out a catalog, but they're in the same valley in Oregon. I think it's called the Willamette Valley.
Mm-hmm.
And they sell a lot of heirloom seeds. They also sell hybrids. But even watching their catalog evolve over the years has been really nice, too. And, mm-hmm. and their catalog, that particular catalog, has a lot of cultural information on each variety of plant that you're growing. So it's like a little mini quick go-to when you want to remind yourself, how deep do I plant the seed? How early do I need to start the seed? How many weeks before my last frost do I want to start a plant? And most of your seed packets nowadays will tell you, start inside with the tomato 8 to 10 weeks before your last frost, for example.
Okay.
So.
Now, do all seeds start the same way, or do you have to do different things for different types of plants?
Well, sticking with vegetables, because that's what I know the most of. Of course, your planting depth is going to be different depending on the seed size and the type of plant. Also, I like to make my own seed starting mixture rather than buying a soilless mixture that they call it for seed starting at your nursery or
mm-hmm.
you know hardware
sure.
store. Because I like to use dirt with mine. It gives them a little bit of a extra grow time in something more substantial that actually will have some nutrients after it's used up its own nutrients when it first starts growing. So I'll mix my own seed starting mix, but you know, for the most part, they all go with the same mixture until I move on to the larger seeds.
Okay.
Which things like squash and cucumbers and melons, you're not going to start those till probably maybe 3 weeks at the most before your last frost, because they do not like to get pot bound.
Okay.
Most of the seed packs will say that they don't recommend starting them inside because they don't transplant well. But I've my experience is it's not as difficult as they make it sound. I haven't had a whole lot of losses from transplanting them. The main thing is
that
you don't want
them
to get pot bound.
Right.
But they still have survived after that even too, so.
That's good. So when you get, say, a packet of tomato seeds and you're ready to start them, what do you do?
Well, first I gather all my materials. I've got my tub of seed starting mix, which is a mixture for me of potting soil and vermiculite, which is actually a naturally occurring mineral that's been compressed, where it can absorb water, but it also drains well.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds kind of contradictory.
I know,
but
it does.
Works that way. There's also perlite, which I usually will. Perlite is a little. It's actually made from volcanic rock, I do believe.
Mm-hmm.
But the pieces are larger, so when you have smaller seeds like a tomato, I think it's easier for them to not have to push up that little white round pellet. I know that's a silly way of thinking, but
no, it makes sense to me.
So I gather all my things. I've got my containers. You can use, if you're going to reuse containers, you want to make sure you sterilize them.
So how do you do that?
You use a one part bleach to 9 parts water, so household bleach. And you're going to soak them in that and just scrub them a little bit. You can even just use hot soapy water, really.
Okay.
I'll take a tub out in the front yard, fill it with dish soap and water, and let them sit there. And then I'll come back a little bit later and rinse them out and lay them all out on the lawn to dry. But in got seed starting mix container, mix seeds laid out, preferably something to mark where you're going to, if you're putting them in cells, which are little groups of pots that fit inside a tray.
Okay.
I'll put labels on the side of the tray so I know what I'm planting where. I have a dome for that, so it has a little greenhouse. But basically, I've got everything gathered. Start putting the moist seed starting mix into the cells.
So why is it moist? Ahead of time, why do you do that?
You want it moist but not sopping wet.
Okay.
Because that way when you're not going to tamp it down really hard because you're going to compress the soil too much. But you're going to, if you start out with dry and then you go to mist it after you do the seed, it's going to sink a lot more. It's easier for the seed to make contact with that moist soil when you begin.
That makes sense.
So there's going to be a recommended depth on a lot of the seed packets. With the tomato, you can get away with the 1/4 inch, even though it's a little bitty seed, because tomato seeds will grow out of nothing. But with something like a pepper seed, for years it would read 1/4 inch depth, and if you've ever looked at a pepper seed, it's almost paper thin, not quite. It's really flat and thin.
Okay.
So if you plant that 1/4 inch deep, it's not going to come up. Not for a really long time. And peppers tend to like a little bit more warmth than, they're more picky than tomatoes. A lot of people will say if you want to set the tray on top of a refrigerator to give it some bottom heat, because they don't necessarily have to have light to start, but once they sprout you need to move them under the light.
Okay.
So I found with the pepper seed, I put it on the dirt and I just barely cover it, because what you're 3 times the depth of the width of the seed is what you really can go by.
Well, that makes sense.
So I'll make a little spot, sprinkle 2 to 3 seeds of whatever variety, just to make sure I get at least one to come up. Usually I end up with all of them coming up, which is quite challenging.
Lots of plants.
I end up with lots of seedlings. Yes. But I put them in that mix also because I take a teaspoon and just put it down in that little cell, pull the whole thing up in my hand, and I can actually separate each of those little plants if I want to into each individual by itself, which, like I said, will end up with, you said, way too many plants. But
sure. So once you've planted them, and you've planted them no more than 3 times the width of the seed, and do you put a cover over the whole tray to...
I'll take some saran wrap, put it all over the whole tray, especially if you don't have the clear plastic dome that comes with a lot of the trays. For years I didn't, and I just used saran wrap.
And that's enough.
And that's enough, because you're still making a little greenhouse.
Okay.
You just have to be aware to keep your eye on when they start popping up and pushing on that plastic, you're going to want to take it off.
Okay.
So I have a light set up. You have to want to make sure you know what your light source is going to be. I use fluorescent lights, nothing, no particular bulbs. It doesn't have to be a grow bulb, anything really expensive.
Really? It doesn't have to be a grow bulb?
No, I mean, so I've put one in there, but I haven't found that it makes any difference.
Oh, so just
the standard fluorescent lights.
Nice.
I use a good old shop light.
Mm-hmm.
I have mine on a pulley, but if you can just hang yours from somewhere. Or even if you're not doing it on the scale that I do, say you have a little under the counter fluorescent light in your kitchen.
Oh, good idea.
You could set a small tray, because they make smaller trays, up on a box or something up closer to that light. And I get a lot of my warmth from my lights being, because you can have your lights as close as, 3 inches isn't too close.
3 inches?
Yeah.
Really?
And even when their plants start growing, as long as the leaves are not touching your light bulbs, your lights are not too close. So that's why mine is on a pulley for me. It's a lot easier. But if you have a stationary one, you just use things to stack underneath it to raise and lower it, and that works fine too.
What about how warm do you have to keep these seeds? Can you, I mean...
There is a, you, it's good to have it from 65 to 70 degrees during the day and 55 to 60 degrees at night.
So when you were mentioning the top of your refrigerator?
That was given the bottom heat.
That's the bottom heat.
That's, and I would say for peppers mostly. But I get a lot of heat from the lights being so close.
Okay.
And I, you know, depending on if you have, where your light is set up, it's, if it's in your garage or somewhere that's a little bit, going to be a little bit colder. I've even read where you can take a brick and warm it up by your wood stove and use that as heat next to your trays your table. For me, I've been known to roll a portable radiator style heater underneath the table.
Okay.
But I'll have things that, so that the trays aren't sitting right on the table, but then I'm getting
so
heat from the bottom there too.
Warmth.
So I used my laundry room last year, so I have the door closed. And
oh, a laundry room would be a great idea.
And it'll warm up the room when you use the dryer.
Yeah. So that's a good use of the laundry room.
If you have room in your laundry room. Plus it's already, it's right there. Because you want to keep your soil moist, so keep your good spray bottle with you, because that's all you're going to need while they're still seedless.
So when they're little itty-bitties, you can't put them under running water, say like from the faucet from your sink.
Wash them right out.
Or
if they're started to get tall, they may just actually break.
They're so fragile.
Yeah, they're so fragile. So a good spray bottle, just mist at the base of them. Because that's the nice thing about that seed starting mix, is it'll take to the mist just fine. And you'll find with the moisture just for the group of them under the light. And if you're in the laundry room, you're going to get humidity from your dryer.
That's true.
Which also gives you more moisture.
That's true.
But you don't want to let them dry out, especially before they sprout.
Right.
But I go in there and keep an eye on it. But with that plastic wrap, you'll notice the condensation building up, and it'll, once you've already, you plant your seed, you cover it with the dirt, you spray it with the spray bottle to make sure it makes contact on the top. Put that plastic wrap on there, and you really, very rarely have I ever had to go in and remist the trays before the plastic came off.
Okay.
So the seeds lean start.
How long does the plastic stay on top then?
Till the seedlings start to show up and start pressing on the top of the plastic.
And how long does that take usually?
It depends on the variety. Tomatoes are usually the quickest thing to come up.
Okay.
Sometimes 5 to 7 days.
5 to 7 days.
Depending on too, if your seeds are newer. Tomato seeds, the viability will stay pretty good for a long, long time. So if they're maybe a couple years old, sometimes it may be a little slower, or if your temperature is not optimum. But I've never had a tomato seed take more than 7 days, I don't think.
Hmm.
But I have my lights on for 12 to 14 hours.
Oh, that's a big consideration.
12 to 14 hours of light, but you've got to remember they need a minimum of 6 hours of dark, too.
Okay.
So, however you want to divide it up. That's how we speed up the grow time and get them to be so big before we put them in the ground in end of May to the beginning of June.
Right.
But in that process, you're going to have to transplant them up to larger pots as you go along.
Because they're not going to stay in that
tree. They're not going to stay in that tree
very long.
Once you want to wait till they get their first set of true leaves before you want to even begin to think about transplanting it.
If they have more questions, they can see you at our open garden events, which are the first Saturday of the month.
Yes, and I will be doing the seed starting presentation at our March open garden day.
That's right.
March 3rd.
Right, and on the garden is open from 10 to 1. The presentations start at 10:30, and the demonstration garden is located at 251 South Beretta Street, right here in downtown Sonora. So I want to thank you, Lisa, and see you at the garden.
Thank you, Debbie.
Bye.
Bye now.